Cola faithful, and welcome to the Game Cola podcast. This is podcast number 182. You infringed on our patent. We're gonna sue. I am your hosting podcast commander, Joseph Martin, joined by...
I'm Blue Rider, and I've patented suing, so if you sue me, I'll sue you.
I'm James Pelster, and I'm currently in jail for patent infringement.
It was him the whole time. So wait, Blue, are you suing me on James's behalf? Are you Blue's? Is Blue James's lawyer in this thing, in this narrative we've created?
I guess I just get money whenever anyone tries to sue anyone.
When did you invent suing?
Before you could ever know.
Before anyone else.
The 13th century.
How many clothes have you made so far?
Clothes?
Yeah, with all the suing that you've done.
I don't think that's correct.
Depending that's on your wrong. Regional accent.
Oh, depending on your regional accent. It is good.
Wait, what did you think I was talking about?
Crime.
Crime? Oh, no. That just reminds me. There's been a video game crime.
Allegedly.
Several.
Allegedly. Many video game crimes against, by, and for video games. Mm-hmm. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
And by podcasters
late.
Like me. Wait.
This is the incrimination podcast.
We're all... Game Cola goes to jail. That's the name of this episode.
For legal purposes, my initial statements are a joke.
For legal purposes, I've done no crimes. Because if I just say that on a podcast, I think it becomes legally true. Mm-hmm. That's the main reason I created a podcast. Yes. And the fact that I'm saying that I created the Game Cola podcast would be a crime. Except I'm saying it's not a crime on the podcast. Therefore, it's no longer a crime.
Yeah. By continuing to listen to this podcast, you are legally bound to agree...
You've agreed to our terms of service
by listening to this podcast. You're committing treason.
Oh.
Okay. So whose patent got infringed or allegedly got infringed? And the answer is, of course, lawyer experts, Nintendo.com.
Who invented everything, actually.
Mm-hmm. I think they invented video games as far as patents are concerned. No, so, okay.
It definitely feels like they invented lawyers.
we're going back to somewhere in the 170s of the podcast. If you recall, we talked about a video game called Pal World, which was a game known, its elevator pitch was Pokemon with guns. And we came to the conclusion that it's more than Pokemon with guns. People need to calm down, but they had a lot of arguments about it. Particularly with whether or not some of these little pal guys looked too much like Pokemon to the point where it was a video game crime. I think that's a pretty good summary. Mm-hmm. Blue, yeah. does that sound fair as the Pal World player?
Yeah, and so now we basically have a verdict on whether they did, and legally they did not.
I think the fun answer is everyone was wrong.
Yeah.
Except maybe me. There's still a way I come out on top on this.
Oh no, we let Joe win. I'm getting my lawyers on this.
I listened back to this podcast. I did. So first of all, I cannot, if you say that I cannot have been correct because I did not specifically say that a patent infringement suit was going to come, then no, I did not say that a patent infringement suit was going to come. But I did say that I didn't think that there was going to be a copyright suit. And I also said that I thought the most likely outcome would be that there's some kind of settlement between the parties rather than a full this side wins, that side loses legal case. I may be embellishing a little bit, but if a settlement does occur, I think I have a solid case for being technically correct and maybe the only person on the entire internet who is technically correct, because I read some of the notes of the articles James sent, because James was like, hey, look at this thing on PC Gamer. Mm-hmm. And I found their interview with a guy who actually knows about patent law, and his prediction was that they're going to meet in the middle in some kind of agreement, because patent law trials especially are very expensive. And it's basically who's going to call whose bluff in terms of actually going through with it. Because although Pal World would certainly stand to lose more in practical reality from trying to fund a case, it's still way more expensive than it can possibly be worth for Nintendo to get a full suit.
Then why are they doing it?
Because saying that they're going to sue makes their position at the negotiating table better.
Okay.
Because they can't retract it, right? They've put themselves in a negotiating point of no return. This is my own interpretation, by the way. We've gotten into strictly Joseph doesn't know what he's talking about, but he's got a podcast that he's the podcast commander of, so he gets to say whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. And I think it puts you in you can't just retract that in the same way that you could like go back and forth in a standard negotiation, right? It kind of puts the ball in their court in whatever the company's name is. I forget the people who made Pal World.
I think that's definitely their name. Mm-hmm. We are the people who made Pal World Incorporated.
Did all this research and I can't even remember the name of the company. Now, how important is it that I'm right, and how important is it that this is potentially kind of messed up? I'll let you be the judge. But I think the judge in the trial will be the judge. But
I'm surprised you did not say yes, it is very important that I'm correct.
I didn't say. I just asked which was more important, which I guess suggests that at least one of those things is very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Also, this is the Game Cola podcast. You can say what the outcome will be, and anyone who's listening, their reality shifts to making it so.
That's how it happened last time. Yeah. I should have just given it to Pal World, huh? Uh-huh. That would have made me really popular.
Yeah, imagine Nintendo losing a lawsuit for once.
I wonder how many they have lost.
So there's the legal question of whether or not they actually infringed on a patent legally, right? Like, there are patents in video games. They're weird and nebulous, but they do exist, and they have been, if not enforced, they have been legally respected in the sense that there have been patents placed on certain concepts in video games that have stopped people from making games that would potentially infringe on those patents.
Like the Nemesis system.
Yes, the Nemesis system is the, did you know, Super Mario Brothers 2 of video game patent trivia.
Oh, really? I was thinking Doki Doki Panic? I was thinking it was the Namco playing a game during a loading screen thing.
Yeah, the games during loading screens is also another one, but I feel like I see Nemesis system more. This is a good point. That's another common one. But it's basically, and I looked into this. I don't understand it. Listener, you don't understand it. It's crazy. This is the stuff that people go to law school for. I don't know.
The other thing that I do remember seeing in the article is that patents are defined by territory. So, like, a patent in one country does not equal a patent everywhere. So, if Nintendo is filing a lawsuit against Pal World and saying they infringe upon such and such patents, that would be filed in one specific country. Mm-hmm. Or if they want to like have some kind of judgment rendered against it, I would imagine they would need to say that there is infringement upon their patent in a bunch of individual countries, which is probably, we said earlier that they tend to be really expensive, and I wonder if that might be wise, because effectively you need a bunch of little mini lawsuits, if you will, for every single territory where such patent might be, and obviously patent law in every country is going to be different, so you might have to define a patent differently depending on where you are. Which, like, just probably makes the entire thing really messy.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's different things about, like, well, there's, like, agreements that countries have made to kind of streamline processes, but then it's still, like, it depends on where you do the thing, and I can't read Japanese patent law, I can't read English American patent law also. So, like, there's a certain point where, right, people say, like, the running theory is that there's these Legends Arceus patents that involve running around and throwing balls at monsters to catch them in stakes with HP bars. And there's a funny little cartoon picture of two dinosaurs fighting with health bars. Because I guess they didn't want to put literal Pokemon in there.
McDonald's.
It is very, if you're familiar on the Game Cola Discord with the McDonald's patent, where the guy stands up and shouts McDonald's to stop the McDonald's ad. Or the
Sony little fuzzy buddy one.
I don't even remember that one.
They were like, here's a little robot. It can detect your emotions while you play video games. And people are like, no thanks.
It seems to me that, generally speaking, people are pretty sour on the idea of patenting video games, anything in video games that isn't, like, literally, like, a tool that was, right? Like, I could see, like, patenting, if, I don't know if you can patent a game engine, right? But, like, you could, I think you could say that some people that, like, using corporate espionage to patent some like software, to take some patented software tool, right? If it was like, oh, they stole this software tool, or like used someone who like worked for Pokemon, got familiar with their software tool and recreated it too closely, right? Like maybe there would be some gray area. But when it's just like, here's a thing that we did in a video game and you're not allowed to make a video game that does that thing, people seem pretty sour on that idea pretty holistically, especially compared to a lot of other things.
Remember innovation? I killed it.
Yeah. It seems like there's no world where this breaks good publicity-wise for Nintendo, which is also the case for many of the things Nintendo does from a legal standpoint, yeah. Right? So it is a cost that they are internalizing, at least, if they've done this, right? Some whatever value they hope to get out of this, it's not, oh, people will be on our side about this and we'll get great publicity for defending our right to video games.
You say that,
content.
But it was also like the whole Power World situation was enough that like people were actively asking Nintendo, like,
but that's,
what?
That's copyright. People feel very differently about copyright than patents, I feel like.
Which is weird.
Because I don't think it's that weird.
Well, at the end of the day, you're still, like, I mean, I guess it does make some sense, but also, like, the idea, or, like, my vague understanding of the premise behind patents and their purpose is so that when someone comes up with a novel and creative and specific idea, the patent is there to protect that idea so that they can capitalize it rather than having someone else sneak that idea out, you know, yank that idea out from under them and do it better before they can capitalize on it. So, like, if I, you know, some random Joe Schmo comes up with self-popping popcorn that requires no heat, or something like that, and then, you know,
broken
and then
entropy,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, like, some guy in their backyard discovers this, they can patent that so that Orville Redenbacher, for example, doesn't say, oh, hey, look, we've just created self-popping popcorn and we have all of these massive resources behind us, and now you have no hope of actually capitalizing on this idea that you had. Like, that's my understanding of the theory, at least, behind why patents are a thing. So,
yeah, I mean, sure, it, that sounds not right. Well, I don't know, though.
And in the same way, and see, to me, I feel the same, like, kind of, well, I can see the theoretical reasoning for copyright law is, like, so that somebody can't go around stealing your hard work. And that, again, I'm surprised that the sentiments around what are we okay, you know, with defending a multi-billion-dollar corporation on is leaning, you know, more positively towards when it comes to copyright as opposed to patents. Like, at the end of the day, they're kind of vaguely similar things of, you know, person that had this idea or created this thing should be the one that gets, you know, that gets to decide who gets to do what with it. And I just find it odd that patents versus copyright would have a significant difference in you know, public opinion when some corporation tries to use it.
There's also that people, the average person has a slightly better understanding of copyright, whereas I think it seems like most people don't even know what a patent is, really. So that might be part of it.
I think that's another, like, there's maybe an emotional angle to this, too, where it's like, getting a patent is hard. It takes a lot of work to set up the legal case, and it protects things that are a lot more broad. There's a specificity to it, but the specificity is also rooted in, like, because you're protecting something more than what copyright protects, which is generally more along the lines of, like, the literal thing. It can still get wacky when you start talking about copywriting a character design, right? But the other angle is that, like, I can just get basically, essentially, I don't know if it's technically called the same thing, but, right, if I draw something and I slap the little Creative Commons thing on it, even if I don't, I think, to a certain extent, that becomes essentially my copyright, right? There's practical concerns about defending it in certain cases, right? But I don't have to, like, fill out paperwork to defend artistic creations that I create in a general sense. Patents are very different in that sense. So, like, when it comes to artists, for example, I think artists are very passionate about the discussions surrounding Palworld and copyright, because they see, like, we talked a little bit about this, because, like, in the intersection of why, like, so many anti-AI people got swept up in this, is because, especially in the current environment, there is a fear among artists, I feel, about the devaluing of the ownership of your own creative work, and sort of this hiding behind, oh, well, it's a big company, so it's okay to do this. And it's like, what justification are you going to use when you copy my stuff, right? You're using, oh, it's a big company in this case. But it sounds like you really just like to take other people's art and use it, you know, without permission.
Yeah.
And if I'm an artist, I start to get real nervous about that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and, you know, sure, Pokemon is a big company, but the people who make the Pokemon are artists. And they were hired, and they chose to use their creative expression to, you know, there was an artist who made Tinkaton. Tinkaton's a very cool Pokemon that I like a lot. And that artist said, I wanted to make Tinkaton, I want to use my artistic abilities to sell this Pokemon, or sell, but, like, you know, I provide my services, and now this has become a part of Pokemon, and that was my choice to do with this creative work. Someone else says, I'm going to make Blinkablun, my own original character, just because Nintendo owns it. Like, there's still the individual artist still should have the right to decide what happens with their work, even if that includes selling it to a big company. It doesn't, like, mean, like, oh, well, then I can just do whatever I want, right? Like, I think you have to kind of, I don't know if you can really just bring big company into it, right? If you want to be consistent. Not to say that people are ever consistent about their beliefs about video games and law, yeah, right? It's so much vibes, right?
Yeah.
And including myself, right? I'm not going to say that I'm absent of this, yeah. But there's, like, if you really, like, look at every single thing a person posts on the internet or says on the internet, or I've said on the podcast about certain ideas, even perhaps within this very podcast, that would be fun to see if people point out the contradictions I make with myself. It gets squishy when you really drill down into it. But my main point is just that, like, I think there's a lot more of a personal feeling when it comes to things like copyright infringement, art, character design, writing, you know, that feels a lot more personal than a patent, where things just, the stuff that's involved is kind of nebulous and most people don't have personal experience with it. It kind of exists purely within the domain of big companies. So it gets weird. I do think that there certainly would be cases with patents where people would get in the weeds about it. But, you know, in general, it seems like I haven't seen a single person really say it's good. The only people that I've seen, like, be like, yeah, Nintendo's patent lawsuit is just, like, cool. This is a good way for them to go after the spirit of what I believe Palworld's wrongdoing to be, which is that they were too derivative. And maybe I believe that Nintendo didn't have a legal standing, but they had a moral standing, and they can use the patent to effectively do justice Just because Power World, again, I'm pretending to be someone else, just because Power World was able to, like, you know, cheat the law a little bit on a technicality, right? Like, that's the only pro-patent take I've seen, as opposed to the copyright stuff where it's like, this is copyright. No, this isn't copyright. But also, this is, you should tell me that I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Artists aren't people. Especially if they are Pokemon artists who draw trees or ice cream cones. Then they deserve to suffer, according to the internet.
No one is trying to infringe on the copyright of the bad model Pokemon trees, I don't think.
If I stole a Pokemon tree and put it in my video game, what would I have to do to get in trouble for that? I could probably do that and just get away with it.
I mean, look at any Nintendo 64 game. They're not being sued by Nintendo. And their trees were terrible.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as the patent thing goes, I'm just not sure that I, you know, again, if I understood things better and moreover, if there were more details to go on to say, do we definitively know that, yes, this is the thing that they're going after? Mm-hmm. Here's why they're going after it. And I mean, because it's possible that the other frustrating thing is that the difficulty with getting a patent is because it's supposed to be very specific. And the reasoning, I think part of the reasoning for that is because you as an individual making something can't be expected to research every single possible patent that you could be infringing. And this is the basis for firms that do, I think, what's called patent trolling, which is they just make a bunch of random patents for things in the hopes that someone will make something that happens to infringe upon them accidentally and then try and go after them. This is an actual thing that happens. But that's something where, you know, generally speaking, if this game, which is like, I don't think anyone could deny it is intending to be very similar to Pokemon, and it also infringes upon a patent, you know, it's possible, very likely even, that they didn't know XYZ mechanic was patented, but obviously they were getting close enough that they are kind of at risk of it by imitating that closely. But even then, it's kind of hard to know exactly, you know, what can and can't you patent in that gameplay formula, I guess.
Yeah, and I think also that what's interesting that you kind of touched upon, right, was that, like, Power World is kind of double dipping a little bit here, right, in that it is very close on both fronts, whether or not you, like, from a legal standpoint, whether or not you agree that morally it should matter. You know, they've created a game that has some very similar mechanics to Pokemon Legends, was released pretty close, was announced even pretty close to the release of Legends Arceus. And there's a new Legends game coming out soon, right? Another thing I would say about what kind of gets Nintendo's motors running in situations where they haven't really done something before is when it really starts to interfere with a game they are about to release or have just released, right? The other thing I think about is the very unfortunate situation of another Metroid 2 remake.
Yeah.
Which finished right when Nintendo was like, here's our actual real Metroid 2 remake. And it's kind of like, it's pretty hard to argue that those two are not in conflict with each other.
And there's another one, which is a game I used to play a lot when I was younger, which was called Super Mario Bros. X, which was basically, I think it sort of simulated the vague general Mario 3 physics, but it came with its own dedicated and really in-depth level editor. And, like, it actually had, like, full, like, scripting capabilities. You could have NPCs with text boxes. You could, even in later versions, like, do a bunch of really fancy stuff. And that was eventually taken down. It was given a cease and desist by Nintendo. I want to say in 2011, 2012, It might have even been later than that, but I could be mistaken about that. It's been quite some time since I looked into the timeline of events there. But obviously, a game that came out within a few years of SMBX being cease and desisted was Super Mario Maker on Wii U, which was like, Nintendo had never done a game like that, to my understanding. So we were all like, that was kind of one of my first, in my head, the most prominent example of, you know, 10-something, 15 years ago, of a time when Nintendo took action against a fan game. That was, until then, I had never really heard of them doing such a thing, and that was very prominent to me. And I was like, well, why would they do that? And I thought, well, maybe they're making one, but then didn't seem like they were, and then Super Mario Maker comes out, and I go, oh, man, maybe that was why. And just also, fun fact, for anybody who doesn't know, I may have mentioned this once or twice before at some point, vaguely. Do either of you know who made Super Mario Bros. X?
I think you said, because this is not the first time you've talked about the level, because I think we talked about it around the time of Super Mario Maker coming out, or maybe we talked about Super Mario Maker at some point,
yeah.
And you talked about Mario level editors that came before it.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure you mentioned it in that, but I've driven up the suspense enough.
It's
do your dramatic reveal.
It is one of my favorite little bits of video game industry trivia. The person that made Super Mario Bros. X is Andrew Spinks.
Made Super Mario Brothers 2.
Yeah, yes. Also known as Doki Doki Panic in Japan. Yeah. They made, they were Andrew Spinks, aka Redigit or Relogic, who went on to make Terraria. So after SMBX was shut down by Nintendo, that person went on to create Terraria.
So in a sense, Nintendo created Terraria.
And also, Terraria is Doki Doki Panic, too.
Don't you regional accent me on Terraria, Blue.
Or Terraria.
Yeah, that's the only way I've heard anyone say it, is Terraria. So.
Terraria.
Terraria, actually.
Anyway.
I need to hydrate. I've got a really bad case of terraria.
Yikes.
It's a good video game. That's not a joke on the quality. It's just how it's... I said it out loud a little bit ago, and I was like, well, that's what it sounds like in my brain.
Oh, no.
but yeah, it's... Yeah, like, we're getting into fan game stuff, and also, like, I mean, the other big thing that you were telling us about, James, was the last available Switch emulator is
major one, yeah.
The last major one has basically gone dark,
yeah.
I guess.
It's vanished. Like they have removed all of the code from the online repository. It was an open source emulator, much like Yuzu was, that came before, that was shut down, I think, not even a year ago. It's just gone. All of the code is gone. All the downloads are gone. The website is currently still up, but the download page is blank. And the other developers said that the lead developer got a notice from Nintendo with what they said was an offer in exchange for that person stopping development, shutting everything down, and removing it from the internet in its official capacity. And that seems to have, they haven't heard a response about what they decided to do, but given what has happened, it seems pretty clear. Now, it's currently very unclear. This is breaking news. This happened earlier today on the date we're recording this. So this is like extremely breaking news, and I haven't heard any further elaboration on what happened, whether it was like some kind of copyright thing, but the phrasing they used was an offer from Nintendo, which I don't know if that means like an offer, you know, if you shut this down, we won't sue you into, yeah, we won't sue you into oblivion, or if this is like some weird, like Nintendo, like they, like the guy sold out. And I think like, I at first I was thinking, well, maybe they actually, like, they don't have any legal authority to take this emulator down because it's doing things, quote unquote, the right way, the non gray area way of just full clean room reverse engineering, which is, at least in the United States, protected and is exempt from a lot of copyright infringement type stuff. So there was some speculation I saw in certain circles saying, you know, maybe this guy, you know, just got an offer that he couldn't refuse in terms of, like, this will, you know, they'll be set for life. And because I don't, you know, open source projects can still make some decent money if they're really popular, but it's not necessarily something you can live off of. I don't know what the exact situation was for the Ryujinx emulator, but there was some speculation that it's like, oh, maybe they actually, like, bought him out. And I don't know. I find that kind of hard to believe because Nintendo, generally speaking, they nuke things from orbit with a vengeance, not with, you know, we come extending an olive branch.
$1,000.
Yeah, exactly. Like, generally speaking, Nintendo despises this sort of thing. So to take a, we're willing to pay you to go away, feels uncharacteristic. But again, like, it would have to be, like, you know, lots of details. But again, the GitHub, the site that which the code was hosted on, if there was some kind of copyright violation, that site has a means to take down code repositories for DMCA reasons, and it will display as such on GitHub's site. And my understanding is that no such filing was made. So it doesn't seem like this was explicitly a DMCA takedown, but it could have been some kind of cease and desist. And I've got feelings about the whole thing. But before I ramble on any further, I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts about it.
Emulation of, like, the current console, right? Whenever that is, always to me feels a little bit like, at some level, you got to know what you're getting into, right? A lot of the arguments that I see for, like, you know, outside of legal, ethical emulation kind of stem from the, like, this game is old. It's not being sold anymore. It doesn't matter to whoever's making, right? Like, the period of, like, this piece of software's economic relevance is basically gone. And the law is really just mincing terms where it doesn't even really matter in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. And I think the closer you get to, like, the Breath of the Wild comes out and people are trying to play Breath of the Wild on the emulator instead of paying for it, that's where you start getting into, like, the, okay, you got to start coming up with some new things to say.
Yeah.
to justify it. And it's not, it's sort of like, you got to know what you're getting into a little bit, right? Like, this is, you are, even if you think you're not affecting a company's bottom line, you know, to a certain extent, you have to deal with the fact that the company is certainly going to believe that you are, because they have sort of priors to think that. And I don't know, like, I'm not necessarily super gung-ho about it, but it's also like, no one made you do this, you know? And so I'm trying to think of how to say it, right? Like, it's not just like, no, you shouldn't have done it. Right? It's just like, part of it too is like a cultural shift, and maybe I'm behind the times, get with the times, old Manning. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, when I was younger, it kind of felt like emulation naturally, just by the way, like, the relationship between consoles and computers worked out, emulation naturally lagged significantly behind modern console hardware. So it wasn't even really a question that people had to interrogate at first, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I can get a Nintendo 64 game on my laptop, but I couldn't get a GameCube game to work on my laptop. So, like, the question of, so, you know, back in the early 2000s. So it's like, it's not even something worth considering. And I think now that we're getting to the point where it can be so immediate, specifically for console games, where I feel like that the vibe of that field has felt different than PC games also. Like, it's something where I feel like we haven't quite landed on what we feel like is acceptable in a ways that we have in other aspects of the kind of like emulation space. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. How good is Switch emulation?
Pretty darn good. Because I'm also
the same, because I thought it would lag behind a lot, because I still cannot emulate Marvel Imperfects, Marvel Nemesis Rise of the Imperfects for PS2 properly.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I mean, like, you can see anyone with a beefy enough computer to, like, make playing video games their career. You know, there's tons of hacks of the, you know, there's Mario Odyssey hacks and Breath of the Wild hacks and all these different hacks of all these different big games.
Like,
and they run, you know, the hacks may be a little buggy, but performance-wise, like, there's, you can see that there's not much of it. Surprisingly, DS emulation is still kind of terrible,
yeah,
which I find very funny.
PS2 is also...
The story of that is...
Yeah, I mean, well, it's because nobody, like, there was, I think the developer behind either MGBA or one of these other things was trying to do a DS emulator. I think, like, Melon DS was the one that was trying to be like, all right, let's actually do this properly, because the philosophy behind developing emulators has also just changed over time, I think. I mean, maybe not entirely. There's possible that some of the really early emulators were like, let's figure out how this hardware works. But, you know, it's kind of this weird shift that has only sort of happened, I guess, which is that emulators originally, computers were not fast enough to emulate the hardware at a very, very deep level. So we were like, or when I say we, I mean the emulator developers went, okay, well, let's get close enough that games will play and seem pretty close-ish to a relatively untrained eye, and that's good enough. It works. You can play Super Mario Brothers on your, you know, Windows XP machine, and that's fine. And then, you know, like, one of the most popular Game Boy Advance emulators, Visual Boy Advance, is terrible in terms of actual, like, accuracy to the hardware, to the point that I found an interesting video, someone posted it on Twitter/X or whatever it is now, which was showing, they said, I used to think that the audio in the Game Boy Advance Pokemon games was horrible and out of tune, but then I discovered that it's only because the emulation of the audio in the really popular older, like, 2000s, 2010 emulators is just inaccurate and pitches up some of the instruments so that they're slightly out of tune. And that if you play it on a more modern, you know, accurate emulator, it sounds way better. And so there's been a sort of shift in the idea of some, you know, emulator developers of, I want to actually understand the inner workings of this hardware and I want to emulate it in an accurate fashion, both for the academic sense of understanding how the hardware works and being able to re-implement it, but also so that we can preserve how these games are supposed to play on the actual hardware beyond the lifespan of that actual hardware. Because ultimately, if we don't have accurate emulation, then any kind of preservation we hope to achieve is ultimately going to be flawed. And, you know, there's technical restrictions even when you want to get super accurate, but generally speaking, as hardware improves, we can get more accurate because getting more accurate tends to require more intense, you know, development and more intense actual, you know, performance impact. But getting back to Switch runs relatively well. I've tried to play one game. I dumped my copy of Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and tried playing it there. You can actually upscale the games, which is you can play them at a higher resolution than the actual Switch console itself can achieve, which is pretty impressive. And for a lot of games, the results are very, very good looking. But there's still weird bugs here and there. The Cloud Sea in Xenoblade Chronicles 2 does not render correctly. It's really buggy and glitchy looking. And I think that, like, you know, PS2 emulation, you were saying, has accuracy issues. And they're making strides on that. But again, a lot of these long-term emulators started out with the goal of, let's make things work good enough. And then only now are they trying to go, well, good enough isn't really good enough. Let's try and do this, quote-unquote, properly. And it requires way more work, especially for really weird, unique hardware like PlayStation 2 and then, you know, PlayStation 3 with the RPCS3 emulator. And it's a really complicated situation. And I realize I've been talking for a very long time here, but to mention something, Joe, you said earlier, is that you can't, with Switch emulation, it feels like you kind of ought to know what you're getting into, mm-hmm. and that's how I feel about it, is I'm really bummed out about this because we are losing years and years of real, genuine, like, research into these consoles, how they function. There are, you know, thousands and thousands of person hours, I guess. We are losing thousands and thousands of hours of work and effort and study, you know, which I think has merit into these consoles. But I don't think it can be disputed that emulation invites piracy. And I used to be a lot more gung-ho about that in my younger years, but I've started to appreciate the work that goes into developing video games, and as I've matured and grown older, I've started to respect that, you know, generally speaking, I at least personally, morally, want to buy the games that I play, and where possible, I'd like to play them. I always want to play them on the hardware that the developers intended it to be put on, and so I've drifted away from emulation, but when you are emulating consoles, piracy is going to spring up, because even though you can have all, you know, Ryujinx did a good job of saying, hey, if you want to emulate games, here's how you use your actual real legitimate Switch console to dump your real legitimately legally purchased video games so that you can gain the benefits of emulation without needing to resort to piracy. But the fact of the matter is there's always going to be people who don't want to buy this console and or don't want to buy these games but still want to play them anyway. And when that console is currently being sold and these games are currently being sold, that is about the biggest impact it can have on a company like Nintendo, etc.'s wallet and bottom line as it possibly can. So the phrase I'd like to say is that these emulator developers are flying very close to the sun, and as we've seen, there have been consequences. They have burned up and fallen from the sky.
But Kid Icarus got to be in Smash.
I think too, it's like there's the bottom line, and I think a retort someone might have would be like, "Well, why should I care about Nintendo's bottom line, right? Like they're big company. What do I care about big company?" But it does, I think, especially when you're talking about like things that are currently coming out now, right? Like the Switch is like the Nintendo console right now. Maybe soon. I don't have anything to say about this. I know there's rumors. I don't want to get into the details until things are more solid. Mm-hmm. But it affects like the decision. I could see it affecting like the decisions that are made, right? Like what games are made, like, are we going to invest in this game if we're not going to get a return because, you know, we're going to lose this much to piracy. There's all these arguments about how much stuff is actually lost to piracy. And you see people say like, oh, it's a service thing, or it's a, you know, I don't have enough money for it. And I would also say that like, this is A, probably true in general, but B, people are really, like, you can look at the psychology research on this. People are very bad at saying, this is what I would do if circumstances were different. You will see very often that that is not the case for a lot of people in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
If I had this much money, then I would pay for video game. I'm not saying because you say that I believe you less, but it does not change how much I believe that you would purchase this video game if you had more money, right? It doesn't, people are, even if I believe that you truly believed it in that moment, people are bad at characterizing that. And I'm not saying that like, therefore wrong, therefore bad, just like, therefore not really providing any information into the discussion.
I have the opposite problem where I don't have enough money, but I still use it on video games.
Yeah, I feel that.
Also, counterpoint to the it affects what decisions they make. So many people buy Pokemon games that Nintendo released Violet and Scarlet in the state they did, and were like, yep, we're too big to fail, this is fine.
I don't know if still playing the video game but not paying for it really communicates that. If you, like, okay, say you had perfect knowledge of the situation, first of all, because, like, it gets into a can of worms about, like, how much, you know, companies' beliefs about piracy and people's beliefs, like, quote-unquote consumers. I don't know if you call them consumers if you didn't actually pay for it. but, like, whatever the beliefs about piracy rates and effects on things, right? If you knew perfectly, like, how many people bought your game and how many people pirated your game, right? And you released a game. And the same number of people played it, but a greater fraction of them pirated it. I feel like you would struggle to come away with the interpretation of that data as, oh, if we had made a better game, more people would have spent money on it.
Yeah, and then there's a similar argument I hear, which I feel like has some logical or at least emotional credence that you want to believe it's true, which is that piracy can drive sales, that if someone pirates, you know, the sort of try before you buy mentality. And mm-hmm. I don't doubt that that is at least somewhat true. But also, again, the fact of the matter is we were talking about the sort of, you know, someone says, oh, well, if I had all the money in the world, I'd pay for all my video mm-hmm. games. And it's like, well, if you had all the money in the world, you could also just afford to work around paying for those things, mm-hmm. you know, like. And so it's really just a sort of it remains to exactly be quantified, I think. I know that there have been actual documented cases where someone said, hey, I release, you know, where like indie developers have deliberately released their game on pirate websites and then found an influx of actual new purchases, which I think is there's something there. But also, that's probably not the majority of people who then went on to pirate that game, like, are the people who then come and buy it. And also, the idea of, you know, the demographic may be different as well. The the people buying, you know, niche indie games versus buying the next big Pokemon game, the mindset there might also be different and lead to a difference in percentage of people who pirate and then buy versus just pirate or would never buy in the first place. Who knows? You know, it's complicated.
You reminded me that, like, I think the industry is getting so bad that I think this year I've read like a dozen articles about indie devs who, or like devs in general, who are begging people to pirate their games because for like one reason or another, like their employer stole their IP basically and is treating it poorly, or they're like just deleting it or stuff like that.
I mean, you see this a lot with like, I feel like maybe not quite as brazen, but like with streaming services, right? And then they'll take the shows off of the streaming services and now there's like basically no legal way to view a show. And I feel like you see a lot of creators who are like, oh man, it sure is too, like, they are legitimately upset about it, but then there's also like this angle of, man, it's too bad that there's no other way to consume this content in any capacity.
And
right, like,
oh man,
there's definitely a vibe of like, it then becomes like, all right, who is ethically, when you think about who gets to decide what happens to the copyright of something, who ethically is in charge of that, right? Like, there's the creator, but the creator made a decision to make, in a sense, right? You could argue that, like, oh, did they make a decision or is that the only viable career path? But, like, to a certain extent, if we take that particular cynicism out, the creator said, I'm making this and I'm selling, I have the right to sell my intellectual property to a company, and then that company gets to do with it what they want. But then, like, when that created product is later mistreated, you know, people definitely tend to side with the creator on, like, what should happen to it. So then the things start to get wonky, right? To bring it in more personally, you know, if I find a really old Game Cola article that is aged very poorly, which
like some
definitely
of them have.
Those exist, yep. There's no, like, real legal stuff. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's some abstract law that applies to this, even though we don't have, like, paperwork about it, right? But, yeah. Like, do I, or Jetty and I, like, what authority do we have to go back and, like, maybe change or remove a word that was placed somewhere, right? Like,
or place a disclaimer at the top.
Right, but like what? Yeah. That's the thing. Like, do we place a disclaimer? Do we just remove the word or a sentence containing the word? Right, like what happens there? Does it matter if the original text is still available through the Wayback Machine, but it's not available on the website anymore, like the regular website? Like, we're sort of getting into those kind of those fun questions. Another fun question to think about in this: does an artist? Because I think the other really compelling thing about emulation, especially, really compelling and also often co-opted by people who really have no business like claiming credit for it, right? Game preservation, right? Yeah. I think game preservation is a really cool, really interesting, and I think like important thing about that emulation Venn diagram crosses over with. Yes. I also think you downloading a ROM of Super Mario Brothers 2, which is actually Doki Doki Panic, did you know? That's not games preservation. You wanted to play the video game and you just decided to download it, right?
And then
so that's like, sorry, I just want to get to chunky question I have about this is like, does a creator of a piece of artwork have the right to make their artwork no longer available if they want to? And you say most art, you know, is unpreserved just because people are not willing to put in the effort to preserve it, right? Big company does not care about. They only care about the dollar signs, right? They don't care that they're making something more difficult to view. Mm-hmm. But they're not like explicitly like, oh, I don't want anyone to see this anymore in most cases. But then there's other cases where companies or, you know, I could bring it back to Game Cola too. There's the Mega Man Hacks & Slash. And I wrestle with that one because it's pretty rough in some cases. And I would definitely handle it differently or maybe not do it at all. Do I put a disclaimer, which is what I have done right now? There's a disclaimer on the YouTube video and there's kind of a disclaimer in the original description, but then I beefed up the disclaimer to be more overt than my 17-year-old self.
It really is original. Yeah. Of galoshes.
I mean,
if I was like, you know what? No, I don't want this to represent me. I don't want this to be associated with me anymore. Do I have the more – obviously, I can literally just go in and, like, delete the YouTube video and delete the podcast. I'm not planning on doing that right now, by the way. I'm just saying, like, hypothetically, I could. But, yeah, that's, like, the thing. Like, when we're talking about preservation, like, at what point is preservation – does preservation supersede the wants of the person who sort of has – legal or and perhaps even moral or ethical or however you want to put it, like, domain over the creative work? That's the chunky thing that I think about.
I don't have a concrete answer to that, to be perfectly honest with you, because I've
been surprised if you did.
Yeah. Well, you're never going to believe this. I just figured out the problem to this incredibly complex moral quandary.
The thing goes into like, okay, then like if Nintendo says we're going to remove all ways that you can play Mario 1. No, actually here, we'll remove all ways you can play Mario 2, which by the way, did you know, Doki Doki Panic. and you're like, well, I think people should be able to play Mario 2, right? Because that's one of the main arguments of like emulation-ish piracy, right? It's like, well, Nintendo, you know, it's not being made available to me, so this is the only recourse. And it's like, well...
Rule of Rose, my beloved.
Does an individual person have the right to say, I don't want you to see this content anymore, to experience this content that I made anymore? And can they sell that to a company to have the same thing? It's like, oh, if we don't want to make this available because our past work, we don't want our past work to interfere with our current work. So do they have the right to do that? I would say that I prefer they didn't. It is better for me personally when I can play all the video games, regardless of what a company wants about it. I can watch all the TV shows, regardless of what a company wants me to do with it. And even if I was willing to pay, but there's no way for me to pay legally because they're hiding it from me. But like, that's a question. And is it, you know, consistent? Would I respect, you know, someone else? Is it different if you just keep it for your personal use or you share it like, oh, I, you know, they took this off the market, but I have, you know, or he, like, I downloaded a YouTube video that the original creator has deleted and said they didn't like. Is it, you know, is there a spectrum of it's okay for me to keep it and continue to watch it personally, but then it would be a bridge too far to upload it for other people to see? Like, is that, is, are the vibes different? You can get really chunky with all
and,
this.
I kind of love it. And I've seen all kinds of different answers to that that I, like, agree with simultaneously. Like, I feel like
you're contradicting yourself.
Yeah, I know. It is. Because, like, you know, I've had YouTube channels that I follow just for one reason or another. Their creators just go, all right, you know what? I'm taking all this stuff down. And it wasn't even anything that was, like, particularly bad. Like, there wasn't any, you know, necessarily a specific reason given. It was just, like, I just feel like I'm not happy with these and I'm taking these down. And there are now channels that are, like, you know, so-and-so archive that have uploaded all their complete works. And from what it seems to me, like, that there's not been any action taken against them. And for that, in that kind of instance, you know, I appreciate that kind of stuff because it lets me go back and watch something that I enjoy, which, you know, is not necessarily, you know, like, based on the fact that the creator is not taking action against it, is not necessarily feeling harmed by this decision. But at the same time, you know, I also see videos, like, from a YouTube channel that I watch that, like, I used to enjoy when I was younger, but now it's very clear that this was made in an earlier age of the internet where things that were considered acceptable to say are not at all acceptable anymore. And they've actually updated all of the descriptions for all of these videos to say, hey, I made these, like, 15 years ago when edgy XYZ such and such other humor and jokes and remarks being made about certain groups was considered more socially acceptable. It isn't anymore, and I no longer agree with these remarks, but for the sake of, you know, letting people enjoy the things that they previously watched, I'm leaving them up, albeit with this disclaimer saying I don't agree with what I said. You know, that's another way you can do it, but
I would say that's roughly how I feel about maybe my opinion will change. Except instead of I thought it was, like, acceptable to be edgy, and now I don't think it's more like, no, I was just kind of stupid, and I didn't realize.
Yeah, and
I feel like I didn't think it through very well.
Sometimes I feel like it's okay to, you know, it's sad, it's unfortunate to have to remove a piece of work because it constitutes more than. It tends to represent more than just the one reason that you're removing it. You know, the Mega Man, gosh, it's been so long since I listened to that. I don't even really remember why that's particularly an issue even, but maybe I never finished it to begin with. I feel like maybe it's, maybe
it's
I shouldn't go back.
It's in the disclaimer.
Yeah, I'll have to look at the disclaimer because I don't remember at this point. But
I tried to make it not as bad, but I was 17 and I just did not have a good sense of, like,
and
how not to make things bad and also just how things would, I wasn't trying to be edgy. I was actually trying very hard not to be edgy. And just, I did a really bad job.
I mean, I still get, like, I went back and I listened to the Mystery Dungeon, like, Shadow the Hedgehog thingamajig. Whatever that hacks and slash was.
Yeah.
And that, like, listening back to that, that makes me uncomfortable.
I feel like we do a better job of calling out the bad things about it than I think we did. Then, like, I wanted to try to kind of call out the bad things or redirect the bad things in the Mega Man 1, and I just did not do a good job at all. And there are definitely parts where it sounds like I'm defending things that I was not defending, but I just did a really bad job of it. And I would respect anyone who was like, did he really say that? And it's like, I totally understand how you got that. That is not what I did, but I did a really bad job and I completely understand.
And
people have different tolerances for it too. There's people who I think would be bothered by it. There are people who I thought would be a lot more bothered by it who aren't actually, like, I think you can tell that it's more like not trying to be edgy, but just like not doing a great job of understanding everything. Again, yeah. It's kind of, I don't want to fully rehash it. I think it's relevant to this interesting discussion about creation, right? Like to kind of put our own skin in the game a little bit, and my own skin in the game.
Right. And
for that.
And I will say,
challenge myself.
And I will say, if you eventually decide, you know what, this really displeases me. This is not, you know, something, this is not an example of my work that I want to show anymore. I'm not pleased with it. I'm not proud of it. I would have done it differently. And maybe at some point I will do it differently, tackle it again, or just maybe it's better that it is not tackled again. And again, this is why it's a matter of, there's a lot of vibes related to how I feel about the decision, is that I would be sad to lose any piece of Game Cola content in some regard, but I would also, if there's a lot of like that kind of context and that kind of feeling behind the decision, I would also probably respect the decision to remove such a thing if we wanted to. Like, if it was a matter of something, it came down to something like that, I would feel bad that it had to be removed, but I would also nevertheless understand at least why it was being done. But as far as like video game preservation, just like to kind of rewind and get back to what I think spun this whole topic off, was video, you know, we claiming video game preservation. I think that that is, you know, we've said it before, and I think we, you know, it is important, and that a lot of what people think is preservation is not necessarily preservation. But that, again, for me personally, at least, I feel like there's a lot of emotional weight that goes into, why are we not preserving something? Is it just because arbitrary greed company line go up and we don't care? Because that to me says a lot about, you know, that to me is what makes me feel more moral about, I am going against what such and such is doing, not on a matter of just blatantly because this thing is categorically good, preservation is categorically important and we should do it no matter what, but because I do not agree with your reasons to not preserve this thing. I feel that there is more worth to it than you are attributing yourself. And for those reasons, I feel justified in either keeping a copy for myself that I already had, or maybe if I felt particularly strong about it, going out of my way to distribute or obtain a copy after the fact, or whatever you may, you whatever have you. But I think also that's also why these sorts of protections, legal protections, are in place for things like, for example, the concept of reverse engineering something, to say that, you know, there is this device that someone made. It could be right. It could be recent. It could be like being sold right now, or it could be 20, 30, 40, 50 years old. And it could still be legally under some kind of protection, even though it's not being sold anymore. Like the copyright might still be being refreshed and renewed for such and such reasons. And you might say, well, hey, I think this is of cultural or historical or academic significance. Therefore, there are protections in place for me to go out of my way to study this thing in a certain predetermined manner. And then I am exempt from perhaps the legal copyright specifics of doing this thing. Like, am I making sense here? Is that sometimes I think that there are that even the law states that there are circumstances under which it is good to preserve things when otherwise legally a creator or company would be able to prevent such a thing. And I think that even speaks in some way to the crazy dichotomy and confusing mess that it is to determine when is it okay to preserve these things when its creators potentially are not. Like, it's such a crazy, complicated decision tree to determine that kind of thing.
Because, like, there's definitely certain cases, like Blue, you were mentioning, right, the live service games, like the Marvel game, right? Like,
yes.
Like, that's, first of all, that's, like, something that is more new that we have to contend with, right? Like, video games themselves already haven't existed for that long in the scope of media. And then also, like, video games that can't exist without internet infrastructure. And then the whole thing about, like, well, then what are you buying if someone says, oh, we're not going to support this game anymore, and so basically you can't play it anymore even though you spent money on it. Mm-hmm. Like, woo, where are we going with that?
And then, that's, like, you know,
the only way, like, it is literally, like, it's because, like, sometimes when I think I hear conversations about preservation, and I'm like, what you're really talking about is access, right? Like, preservation is, like, make sure that this data, this information, is not lost forever, even if it is not accessible right now, right? Like, I think, you know, the Switch emulator goes down, right? And that means that there are people who will not, you know, if a Switch emulator doesn't come back up in a decade, then in that decade, if you don't have access to the game on Switch, there's no way to experience it, right? But there's another angle of it, of where, you know, the preservation angle is, like, can you store the data of the game in a certain way? And then later, you know, if you assume in, like, 20 years, Nintendo doesn't care about Switch emulation, just, like, they kind of really don't care that much about NES emulation right now, to the point where I think they've at least been alleged to just, like, take emulators off of the internet and be, like, plug it into their own stuff. Like, then it's still preserved, right? Because, like, future generations will still have access to it. Yeah. The timelines I'm using are maybe a little bit long for people to be comfortable with that. But, like, in a sense, right? Like, is there, you know, if we were in a place where it's like, all right, we'll let you emulate games for preservation purposes, but you have to wait. You can like, download your copies and everything, but no one's allowed to play it until the next console comes out, right? Like, is that blocking preservation, really? And that's not how it happens, right?
But,
like,
yeah,
we're thinking about sort of the effective results of things, right? Like, does that sort of change the calculus, right? Because there's, like, oh, well, don't worry, there's a copy in the Library of Congress somewhere. It's like, well, not everybody can go and play that copy in the Library of Congress, but it exists, it is preserved.
Yeah.
You may argue that, okay, we should maybe have a couple copies in case something happens to that one, but like, you get what I'm saying, right? Like, there's a difference between this information will not be lost to time, and this information is accessible to some subdomain of people that I think should have access.
Yeah.
And I think the argument then becomes, okay, what is that subdomain?
Right.
You know, is it, I think a set that people, I feel like, tend to agree on is, did you pay for the video game at some point? Right. And like you say, like, you can dump your data. But even if, like, Nintendo generally says, like, no, you still can't do it, wag, wag finger, on, like, their website. Like, it seems like most people are pretty on board, like, yeah, if you can just get a ROM of a game that you already have without dumping it yourself, like, that's ethically pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen much pushback from people other than Nintendo on their websites against stuff like that. But then you go to, like, okay, well, what about, you know, economic factors, people who can't afford things, you know, then you get into a very nebulous question of, like, okay, well, then what's the threshold for being able to afford a video game?
Yeah.
And then you get into, like, that sort of self-reporting where it's like, would you actually behave differently if you had 10 times the money, you know, 10 times the access to money that you have now? I don't know if I believe you.
Yeah. And then we get into,
not,
like,
believe you, but it does not update my opinion on what you would do based on what you say.
Yeah. And then it gets into, like, you know, there's also, like, the issues of, like, you know, territory. I mean, like, you know, with mm-hmm. earlier game consoles, a lot of the, you know, there's, I think in Brazil, like, the Sega Master System is, like, still the most popular game console there or something like that, because, like, later tariffs and such with imports made importing newer games and consoles, like, really expensive or something. And so, like, mm-hmm. the bootlegging and piracy there was basically because, you know, like, that was rampant because things were crazy expensive. So I think there's still potentially an argument to be made of, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm not, I'm not saying like, oh, you're poor, right. You shouldn't be allowed to play video games.
Right. But
that's like a part of the, you get, it becomes nebulous at a certain point, even if maybe yeah. you could bring up an individual case and say like, yeah, you just download the game. Yeah. I don't care.
And I think,
and like, what it was my opinion matter anyway, also. Right. But, but like then you, when you try to come up with like a general rule, then things get murky, unless you just kind of go with, you know what? No, I believe that everyone should have free access to all media, and any payment for it should be considered a donation to say that I would like this to it to continue, right? You're saying like, I could play any video game that I want, and I will spend money to legally purchase the ones that I think deserve it.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's a,
that's like the very, I don't kind know of how logical I, extreme I, of it, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm like right in that camp, but it does seem like, it seems fairly consistent and like pretty clear, like you've pretty clearly defined your boundaries in a way that I feel like some other things are like, this gets really murky. Like what's the boundary line on what you consider acceptable? How much of this is vibes based?
Yeah.
And then there's people who are like, I shouldn't have to pay money for anything. It's
which
a crime. Money is a crime. I don't believe in money. I want everything. I would download a car.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't, honestly? Same. I mean, I'd love to download an apartment. I'd love to download some money right now. That'd be great. I hear this thing called cryptocurrency is really yeah, really popping off.
Is. Cryptocurrency is when you download money.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Blue?
No, I was just saying same. I would download a car. Sorry. Oh, okay. Sorry, Jerry.
I was going to say, did you, that was the insight that you
confessing to downloading
brought.
A car?
This is
I could go on. I could go on about this.
I think
this
we need
thing.
To, this has been the whole podcast. We should talk a little bit about games we've been playing, but like, I love
quick.
Talking about this stuff. It's so meaty. It's so interesting.
It is.
It's so weird when you like actually have to start saying the stuff that's rattling around in your head and start realizing like where maybe some of your contradictions are on how you feel about this. And also like GameCola's relationship with emulation is such that like if there are any bridges to be burned, they've already been burned. Like, so I'm not super worried about that. Paul once uploaded like half an episode of Mighty Max to the Mario 2 playthrough. So like,
wow.
And we didn't get sued by Nintendo.
Relationship with copyright has always been interesting.
Yeah. Oh man.
It would be funny if the only part of that Mario 2 video that got copyright strike was the Mario 2 part yeah. and not the Mighty Max part.
Real quick before we get into games we've been playing, anybody been playing Concord? We were talking about live service games that go offline. Boy, howdy.
Is it like dead?
It is,
they pull the plug?
The servers are offline. They've offered, yeah. So they, I think the game was up for a week, maybe a little over a week. And then they shut down the servers. I think they said they'd shut down the servers. I don't know if they shut them down immediately after a week, or if they said it'll be shut down at the end of the month. But it was up for at most 1 month, and there are unconfirmed reports, allegedly by people who were on the development team, that the game cost something like $400 million and was in development for 8 years.
Expensive way they could possibly do it, like. How does a game get this far? Right? Like, I didn't know anything about Concord. I still don't really know much about Concord. But like,
I don't either.
To
but
a
it's...
certain extent, like, as you're about to release this game, you gotta think, like, man, nobody likes this video game as during all of these, like, playtesting things. I don't think anybody's gonna buy it. Let's just not spend all the money to market and release it.
But then it just
but
makes
no, they
you wonder,
did all of that.
But like, then it just makes you wonder: was that the risk? Like, I feel like was that the response they got in the playtests? Like, again, there's more and more unconfirmed rumors of saying they called it, I think, toxic positivity, which is that criticism was generally disallowed or disapproved of any kind. Which
in the
like
company or
yes,
in like the community
in the company.
Okay.
So, which could potentially, like, again, you could say maybe their focus groups were just pulled from a biased place that was biased towards these types of games. Because I think a lot of the complaints I've heard, again, I didn't really follow this game. I just heard about it just before it came out and was like, well, actually, no, I think I saw the trailer in the state of play and was like, man, this just looks like another Overwatch. And I was like, man, they're still making these games after bajillion years, and I'm still
Marvel Rivals is good. Leave me alone.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then Valve is making their own game that's like kind of sort of like that, and so it's
Marvel
like
Marvel Rivals makes sense. I think we've talked about this, but I get like how Marvel Rivals could bring something to the table in this, right? I get the pitch there because like the. Just like this, but right, like the thing that people felt was like the biggest missed opportunity of Overwatch is that like the lore, they had all this lore and then just like nothing, right? Like they didn't like utilize like the interest in the lore until people lost interest. And like Marvel can like just do that because they don't need to like make up the new lore. They can like tease the lore and then you can be like, oh yeah, we already have like all this stuff that you can purchase.
The
like
fun part is that they are making up a bunch of new lore for it, though. So sure. They're, like, going the extra mile for that, and that's neat.
Yeah.
Sure, but, like, also there's still, like, there's media, and if they want to make new comics based off of it, like, all that stuff is there. And I can see, like, the pitch of that being, like, that brings something new to the table versus, like, this is my Overwatch. We have, instead of a gorilla... We have an orangutan.
Yeah.
Aren't we creative and original?
And in a market that's already saturated with these types of games, just making this game, like, that was the thing, is that the marketing, it just, from what I've seen, like, there was very little marketing, but the marketing that was there was just showing off this game. It's a character-based, you know, shooter, team-based shooter. And what differentiates this? What makes this special? I remember a lot of people making comparisons with Guardians of the Galaxy in terms of like the vibe of the trailer.
It was very much Guardians of the Galaxy, but much worse and like corporately sanitized even further to like just nothing slop.
Yeah.
Where does it sit on the scale in relation to anime fan on prom night?
What?
We don't get this reference, Jim.
You don't? Oh, man. Not the Mighty Number 9 trailer? Come on, guys.
I have a vague recollection. Jinx.
They're like, you're gonna cry more than an anime fan on prom night.
Oh,
and it's like,
that's
who do you think you're selling your video game to, sir?
Yeah, and
well, it's more like
everyone likes
focus tested to oblivion than like weird edgy.
Yeah.
No.
So it's actually like kind of worse
back.
In some ways because at least that has personality.
Yeah, and so they just were like, well, we've optimized it down to, like, you know, we've basically sanded away all the rough edges, so it must be what people are going to want, because it checks all of these boxes that we've predetermined. And then it's just, like, apparently a shock that no one's interested in this thing that is just the most playing it safe, uninteresting, sanitized, like, just bleh, nothing, with no actual something substance that will make you want to play it over any other thing. But they were acting like, oh, this is gonna be the next big title. Like, I think there was at that same state of play, there was like this Next Level or Secret Level or something, which was like a documentary series about, you know, games and their production and that kind of thing. I'm not totally right on the details, but
Secret
apparently
Level's the new show that's going to be on Amazon that is like made in Unreal Engine. It's not a documentary.
Oh, okay. But it, but isn't it talking about the development of like a bunch?
No, it's stories. No, it's like
Secret Level is different. The thing
it's
with
like
Mega
Love,
Man
Death,
in
and
it?
Robots, but for video games.
Hmm. Okay, I thought there was some kind of like documentary series that was.
I mean,
being
maybe
made
there
about
is.
Video
it's
games.
Just not that one.
Yeah, and that there was supposed to be one about Concord's development. And I was like, wow, you really, like, there is no mistaking that, like, they were really...
disconnect is just wild.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, what are you gonna do now? Because now you have a documentary on a game that's supposed to, that took this long and took this much energy to and effort to make, and now you have a documentary about it, but clearly, like... you can only assume that the documentary was expecting it to do better than we didn't last a month before shutting down and offering everyone refunds.
Yeah, it's. I guess this is a little bit different, but I do. I never actually watched it, but I do remember like there's a documentary about Frozen 2, and you know the Disney movie, and people that who have watched it, I've heard them say like, well, yeah, that like detail of the production kind of explains every single problem I had with the movie. Even though it was like, obviously it was made by Disney. It was meant to be like this positive thing about, look how we made our cool movie. So I don't know, like, I don't know. It's almost like, even if they like pitch it as like, here's a documentary about this cool video game. And it's, you're just like, what, how did you, how are you doing that when this game only lasted a month? Like, even in that context, it would still be super interesting to see that. I don't know, though. You're right. Like, does that ever see the light of day?
Yeah, that's what I want to know is, like, what, like, if it does see the light of day, how much, like, what do you, if anything, what do you change it? Like, do you editorialize and go, yeah, after the fact, we realize that something had gone horribly wrong and there were significant, you know, like, this did not turn out as anticipated. How would you editorialize that? Because it's got to be in some part meant to be like touting this game.
It's a fluff piece, right? Yeah. Like, to a certain extent, it's like an ad, right? Like, it's meant to be like,
or something. I mean, it's got to be
like, like, the reason you make something like that is to, like, get people to engage with the, right, if it's commissioned by the people who are making the video game, right? Like, it's to sort of drum up, like, just some way of onboarding. I don't know. It's interesting. We need to talk about the video games we've been playing in recent times.
That's
true. We're going pretty long. I got my GameCube set up here finally. I played a little Monkey Ball. It was fun. I need to, like, get back into just, like, on a console, you know, not on a handheld like the Switch, like video game playing. So I need to get into GameCube. But I've also gotten myself sucked back into Pokemon Showdown. I need to stop. It's like a bad habit, but it's like, I can make number go up if I play Pokemon good. I just want number to go up, you guys. Why won't you let me make number go up? Why are
you not playing Fusion Showdown instead?
That would have the same problem, except I'd be worse at it, so I'd be mad more often. Or I don't know. I guess if there's a lower player base, because, like, some of those categories on Pokemon Showdown, I've gotten in, like, the top 10 just because, like, the bar is not particularly high. So if you're kind of actively playing, just the statistics of it, the skill ceiling is kind of low based on just how many people are playing it. I got a pretty high. I think I got to the top 100. I don't know if, I think I played someone in the top 10. I don't know if I made it to the top 10, but I've definitely made it to the top 100 in a couple categories, like Gen 9 1v1 or something. I'm sure I talked about it on the podcast. Anyway, that's sort of the general. Oh, I played Tekkit. I don't know if I talked about this on the podcast.
Oh, the old classic Tekkit's, Minecraft mod pack?
Yeah.
Oh,
the old classic Tekkit. I was like, I missed it. I saw. It was a flashback, but it's also, like, very much like, yeah, I got to the same point I pretty much always got to back in the day where I'm like, you know what? I've made things, and now it's no longer fun. Now it's literally just I go in, I dig a hole, I make the same stuff, I put it into the things, and I get all this stuff, and it's just like, oh, I get this stuff that makes this stuff, and it just goes up to make this stuff. And it's like, right, it's like, oh, I've got this super armor. Well, now I've got the super duper armor. Well, now I've got the super duper extra loop de looper armor. And it's like, I'm not fighting, like, I've maxed out not caring about the monsters, like, so long ago that I got the jetpack. That's always where I get stuck, is I get the jetpack and then I fly around and I'm like, yeah, well, this is the fun bit that I wanted to do. And I've kind of just, I fell out of it. But it was a fun trip down memory lane. All right, Blue, what about you? Are you going to sue?
Yes, everyone, everywhere. That is what I will do. Ha ha. Rhymed.
You can also rhyme. I've taught you well. You didn't know how to rhyme before me, but now you've listened to me on the podcast.
It's a good thing you didn't patent enough, it.
You know. Yeah. Ah, dang it. I should have done that. All right. What game have you been playing, Blue?
Okay. Where do I begin with this one? A couple days ago, I bought this game that was recommended to me by Steam because it's a visual novel death game kind of thing, which is very much in my wheelhouse, if nobody has noticed.
I have, in fact, noticed.
It's called Love Exalt 8372.
That also, that title itself sounds up your alley.
Yep. And I'm still recovering. But I finished the first act, so, last night. It's very good. It's, I guess it's like if you took Zero Escape / Danganronpa, and then you put it in the world of, like, an RPG, and so everyone's, they don't have names, you call them by their class, like healer, and so they all have, like, abilities, and then they get stuck in a death game, and it does that thing that, like, my absolute favorite pieces of media do, where they have a lot to them, like, in their world, and it feels, like, lived in and real and stuff, and it expects you to keep up. It doesn't hand-feed everything to you. It doesn't underestimate the player, I guess. And that's a lot of fun, because the setting's really neat. But, it's written well, and there's a lot. I played like 11 hours, and I played a chunk the first day, like 2 days ago, and I was like, wow, this is neat. And then I finished the first act yesterday, and I was like, wow, that happened. And now I have to figure out how I feel about this. So yeah, that's been fun.
Nice.
Well, do your best not to get murdered.
I tried.
Tried past tense.
How did it go?
Well, spoilers. It is very, it was like, I'm like one of 100 people to have played it, I think, because it had like 20 Steam reviews, I think. And yeah, so I'm part of the exclusive people. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And so now I'm spreading the word.
Are you saying you're gaming outside of the mainstream, Blue?
Yes, and I need other people to be traumatized, so.
All right, well, it's James' turn. Traumatizes James.
All right. I've been playing Dragon Warrior 1 on the NES.
No.
Oh. How could you? Oh, I'm traumatized.
It's been pretty good.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it so far. I mean, I'm only, you know, as at this point, I'm on, we've released up to episode 3, and yeah. I've watched those, but it's got Jetty, it's got Nathaniel. This is sort of becoming show notes a little bit, but, because we're advertising it, but like, it's a really
cross promotion, Joe. Jeez.
Yeah. Synergy. I'm just saying we usually do this at the end of the podcast. But yeah, it's really interesting hearing you guys talk about your different experiences. And also just like, I meant to comment and I like forgot about it, and then I lost like the paragraph. It wasn't a paragraph. I lost like the couple sentences that I wrote, and I just never got back to it. But like the single play, like the single character RPG, I feel like is a really interesting archetype that we don't, in the sort of JRPG space, we don't see quite as much anymore. Yeah. You know, usually you have a party.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting where, like, just kind of through technical limitations, almost, like, maybe not purely, but, like, that was just kind of, like, a normal decision you could make, right? Like, it doesn't seem like it's particularly interested in the fact that it's just about one guy. That's just what the game is, because it was, like, a reasonable design decision at the time.
Yeah. And then from what I hear, Dragon Warrior 2 is basically like, hey, it's this game, but the formulas we've added 2 or something or 3 something party members to the mix. Mm-hmm. And now you have a party.
And so now it's a party.
And now it's everyone a party. Is here. Yeah. And so that'll be interesting to see if we decide to move on to that, just the evolution up to that. But that's about all I have to say about it right now, because mainly because I elaborated on it so much more in the actual playthrough. I don't want to spoil it for people. Mm-hmm. go watch the series. It's really wonderful. Mm-hmm. The energy is fantastic, especially thanks to Jetty and Nathaniel being there. Like, oh my gosh. So the other games I've been playing Ace Attorney Investigations 2 on the collection that just released on my Nintendo Switch. Well, the collection released on many platforms, but I'm playing it on my Nintendo Switch. And that's really been enjoyable. I played a bit of the fan translation years and years ago, but it's been a long time. That being said, I still internally know all of the characters by their fan translation names, so every time I see their new official names, it, like, there's a disconnect, and it's a little bit weird, but I'm up to case 2, and I'm really enjoying the game so far, but I don't have too much to say about it, especially because there's so much I could say that would be spoilers, but...
So which one are you playing again?
Ace Attorney Investigations 2, the game that up until was not... It was the only, I think, remaining untranslated Japanese-only Ace Attorney game.
You'll Game Cola faithful, if you'll indulge me and you go to like the Game Cola website and you look up like the tag for Ace Attorney Investigations 2, it'll be a part of this podcast tag. I'm pretty sure we talked about this on another podcast, but like a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like whenever this Ace Attorney Investigations 2, because like that comment just gave me a really strong deja vu.
I forget if it was after they announced it in a trailer, because I want to say it was in June they announced that it was when they announced
this
the thing.
This June.
Yeah, this June.
I was listening to a podcast that recently.
It was only very recently.
Maybe this has happened before.
Well, the announcement is brand new. That was completely...
Maybe not for Ace Attorney Investigations 2, but maybe some other...
Apollo Justice.
That hadn't been, I think maybe some other Ace Attorney game that had been Japan only for a really long
time.
Great
Ace
Attorney? Popular fan.
Oh yeah,
I
mean,
like,
Great
I
Ace
say,
Attorney.
I want to say did, that the that discussion, is... I think I know what you're talking about, and I still feel like the discussion was about Ace Attorney Investigations 2 specifically. I just can't remember when we had the discussion, because I feel
June's
like...
June's just too recent, because I don't think I've listened to a podcast that
I know,
least.
But for me, like, the last year has felt like 2 or 3 years long because of, like, stuff going
yeah,
on personally with
I
me
do
but
get
like
that.
Oh my gosh,
but like June is like 4 months ago.
I know, it's weird, it doesn't feel
that
right,
that feels too recent.
Yeah,
because I'm pretty sure Diana was on the podcast that I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, we should I can't wait to hear what she thinks of that. But
the timing just didn't work out this month. I've been I want to get her back on when she can.
I do. We need to have a Xenoblade. All right, Joe, I will say this once for you to throw you a bone. We need to have a Xenoblade podcast.
Yeah. Well, hey, you are in charge. I've said this a bunch of times. We want to have a dedicated podcast for a certain game. It doesn't need to be part of the main Game Cola podcast.
Yeah.
Anybody can put together their own little.
You're right.
You know, we had the Avengers cast. You don't need my permission.
That's
just
true.
Do it.
That's true.
Just
I already do it with the YouTube. All right, fine. I'll have to figure it out. Oh, the one other game I wanted to mention I've been playing is Subnautica Below Zero. I've technically already played this game, but it was several years ago, like 2021, I think. I mentioned sometime a while back, at least a year ago, that I was playing Subnautica. I think it might have been on the April Fool's, the J3 podcast. But I was talking about how I really liked Subnautica, how that game, the atmosphere and the immersiveness of just being present in this weird alien world and the immersiveness of, well, being in water, but also of just that experience of you're just in this world exploring. And I really liked that. The gameplay and the atmosphere and the vibes, we say that a lot, but as vague of a term as that can kind of be. But and this game, I'm really enjoying it as well. I think that the world design is even a little bit better and more interesting. But my main complaint about it, and from what I understand, this is not an uncommon take, is that I don't like what they did with the story. In the original game, the story was mainly a show, don't tell, or like you would go out of your way, you'd explore, and you would find these things, and you would learn about the world. But it was mainly just you discover these things about it, and so you just had to... there was only as much lore as you wanted to discover for yourself outside of what was necessary to beat the game. But this game, Below Zero, puts the story more in your face, and for one thing, the protagonist has a voice now. Like, they actually talk, mm-hmm. and they, like, monologue and talk with other characters, because there's, like, actual other characters that you meet, and I don't like that. Personally, I prefer it when the protagonist was silent and just this was just you are immersed in this world, you are alone, and you're discovering the fragments of what was there before you, even if it was only just recently there before you. And I appreciate what they were trying to do, trying to go in more in on the lore and the story in a different way. But I feel like it works to the game's detriment because it almost takes you out of that really immersive gameplay loop by having the characters just start talking about things and having these external motivations to why they're here in the first place, as opposed to the first game where you didn't ask to be here, you were just thrust into this situation, you just had to get up and go. So I feel like it feels like there's baggage, basically. The story feels like baggage and not like something that adds to the game. It feels like it detracts. It pulls you out of it in some ways. And I'm not a huge fan of that. But the core gameplay is still really good. I feel like they've made a lot of improvements based on, you know, the first game. So there's a lot of stuff that's more polished and refined, but the some of the more experimental stuff they've tried to do works to its detriment. And I've heard that there is a third game in development that's been in development for several years now at this point, like confirmed. But we haven't really heard anything about it at all. And I'm hopeful that that game will maybe, you know, take lessons learned once again and improve things further. So but those are the main games I've been playing.
Well, I think I need to wrap things up quickly because we've gone pretty long this one. It was a good podcast,
yes,
but it's been pretty long. So thank you for listening to this episode of the Game Cola Podcast. If you like what you heard, check us out on GameCola.net, internet website, GC.net, the letter G, the letter C, the word dot, the word net, the YouTube channel. Go watch the Dragon Warrior or West. Dragon Warrior or Quest. What is it titled? Is it?
It's Game Cola Plays Dragon Warrior.
Dragon Warrior. Look up the Dragon Warrior playthrough. I'm sure it's like the most recent. Statistically, it'll be one of the most recent videos. Though the other one is the Crystallis End Day watch along of Nausicaa Valley of the Wind because of all the Crystallis references in that movie. And that's definitely the order of operations there. it was good. I watched we tried to premiere. Jenny didn't talk to me about making it a premiere. It was interesting to make it a premiere. I think you can watch me leave comments. James was there in the beginning, but it was like at 2 p.m. Eastern time. So I think everybody was just at work.
Yeah.
There's one guy who was really excited about Azteca.
Yeah.
but I think it's really interesting. Jenny put in a lot of like extra little visual things because we couldn't just play the movie, right? But like,
yeah.
there's still images that kind of contextualize things. So even if you can't watch the movie live with it, you can see, and he added a bunch of fun little like joke images, context images, animations, some clips from Crystallis when we're talking about comparisons and stuff like that. But yeah, you can see us talk about like, whoa, why did they put that tank on the bridge like that? That seems like a bad idea.
That's a Chrono Trigger thing.
How princess positive that movie is. It's very princess positive. Very pro-princess, that movie.
How radical.
Yeah, read a radical position. So yeah, and then, you know, come join us on the Discord. Links are in the podcast description, the YouTube description. You can find it on the website. You can find us, you can listen to us say funny things about video games and also be notified of when we do things. We might do another watch along. I think it would be like maybe a Discord thing, but we've talked about maybe doing other watch alongs in the future just because it was kind of a fun time doing that Nausicaa one. I think that's got to wrap us up for the end of this podcast. Thank you again for listening. I rescind my suit and any other suits that were pending. You're free to go. You're no longer being detained.
I'm free.
Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful time of day it is, wherever it is, whenever it is you're listening to this podcast, and we will see you next month. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Say, wasn't that movie you were watching sounds like the game I was playing, Subnausicaa.
I was resisting. I couldn't find a good way to make it work, but yeah, I was thinking like, that's why I held Sub-Zero. Off. Sub-Zero, so it's just ice. Like, you don't actually do any aquatic stuff. Yeah, it's just below like, oh, zero. Wow, I'm just on this big
block of ice. And you land in a big icy tundra. You're like, not icy tundra, but yeah, you basically land on a giant, like, floating ice berg.
But you still get to go underwater.
Oh, yeah. That's the majority of the game is underwater.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It would be funny if it was just like, no, it's just solid. It's just a solid block of ice. There's no animals. There's no nothing. It's just ice.
The goal is to thaw the game out and make it a water world again. Mm-hmm.